in a world where...
Nah, this ain't that kind of podcast. Let's be honest. The world doesn't need another podcast where we ask the same old questions to the same successful people. You're listening to the Profit and Impact Podcast with Nev Harris. Grab a seat at the table as Nev and his guests dig into the challenges that successful agencies and freelancers have overcome to achieve their success. There's no script, and Nev's insatiable curiosity and ADD can take the conversation anywhere. So let's get real and have some honest talk, lots of laughs, and some helpful insights into what it really takes to create more profit and impact in your business.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Profit and Impact. My guest today is Kimberly Lapari. Kimberly here, she is the CEO of a really cool company called Valet. It's a technical professional services company. Nev, what the hell does that mean? Well, it means a lot of crazy kind of stuff. You know, she's support services for people who have WordPress websites, for doing WordPress websites. Let me give you a quick take here. If you get that healthcare website that you're really doing some really cool stuff with, or you're scared to take it because of HIPAA, this is where Kimberly's company really comes in, and they're absolute rock star about this kind of stuff. So, Kimberly, say hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I am fantastic. So let's dig right in. You have a really cool backstory here. When did you get started? How did this all get started? What year was it when Valet got their founding?
So Valet started sometime around 2009, early 2009, officially. I think on the paperwork it's around 2010. But like every business, it kind of starts as a little grassroots solving a problem. And then you go, wait a minute, I need something for tax purposes. And then
exactly.
You spin up that LLC.
Taxes, what are those? Do I have to pay those as a business owner? You know, I thought I just got all this money, like my W-2 paycheck, you know.
Right? Isn't this what business owners do? Get paid a lot of money?
Yeah, and you get through the first year and like, taxes, oh, shit. So, I owe a lot of money. So that's kind of in the middle of recession. So, like, you were telling me you had, like, a bad break, and then you ended up on your own and everything like that. You're a very successful, very educated engineer that did all sorts of cool stuff, you know, stuff that I couldn't even begin to understand when she was telling me about loads on bridges and stuff. It sounded really neat. And I was like, geez, if I could only be that smart one day.
You are, definitely.
So what were you thinking, you know, when you're thinking it's in a, and you left an industry in oil and gas and everything like engineering that's pretty much recession proof at the time, you know, and then you started in a recession. You're like, well, let me just take a chance at starting this company. That's pretty gutsy.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of what I learned in my schooling and then my career up until that time had just been to kind of look at the big picture. I had been newly married. My husband had changed careers. I was having a baby. So I was already, I think, in that mindset of just forge on ahead. And I was used to these long tail style work projects that sometimes, you know, kind of drag on and were tedious. So I think my mind was already primed for, I really didn't pay much attention to what was happening outside of my own world. I was just going to lean in and make something happen.
Yeah. And I think that's when things do happen, when you lean in and really just say, screw it, I'm going to make this work, you know?
Right. I had no idea what I was doing.
like, you know, I think we were talking about this before the show. I think that's how most businesses start. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, right. It's just you almost don't know enough of what you're not doing to be like, hey, what the hell? You know, I could do this. So.
Right. Stumble into is a phrase that I would use very often describing how I got where I am. I stumbled into something at one point or another.
And now you've been doing this for like over a decade, and Valet is a pretty successful company.
Yeah. We've been around for almost 10 years. We'll have to do something special, I guess, for our anniversary. But yeah, we've been ups and downs, you know, expansions and retractions. But overall, you know, working online has been really good for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. And if you see this guy going to be walking behind me, apparently I got a package. I'm kind of excited about what it is because I'm not so sure what kind of package I got. But you know, packages are fun. So
yes.
I used to have a consistent Amazon person, and I almost felt like I should invite him to Christmas dinner one time because he was stopping by my house so much. I wanted to invite him in for coffee one day because I see this guy more than my family. So it's like,
hey, yeah, I get you a Coke.
Yeah. So weirdo. No, honestly, I'm not.
It's like working together though. Your work people become, you know, more family sometimes because you spend more time with them. So I get it. The Amazon guy, we had a UPS guy like that for a while, I guess.
Yeah, my sister said every time she was here, UPS, she's like, do you ever have a day that you don't buy something? What is going on here? She's how are you getting this stuff? Because I keep I track the credit cards and pay them and everything like that. And I'm like, well, but so how'd things go when you first started then? Everything was roses, right? Because that's how every good business starts out.
No, not at all. We had no structure. We had no pricing schedule. We had no consistent billing. We had, I don't even know if we had a general project management repository of information. I think a lot of it was scattered around emails and Google Docs. So it was pretty messy. And we learned very quickly that, and that was, I guess, part of mostly my role whenever we started, was to try to organize things. Because it's like, you can't live like this. You can't work like this. We've got to have some sort of organization. So it was not roses. And we tried very hard to try and figure out a marketing message and all this other kind of stuff. And we were just really good at helping people. So we struggled with a lot of things early on. We still struggle, but yeah, early on there was a longer list, I think.
So I think that's cool. You said you're just really good at helping people. And mm-hmm. and so you just embrace that mentality of trying to be the most helpful person.
That was, I think our original tagline was support peace of mind or something like that. Because that was, we were just really, my co-founder was a teacher and I just came from a background of, wanting to be helpful. And I had a lot of waitressing experience, right? My years, 7 or 8 years. So I had this really kind of disposition of what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? What do you need? And so that was sort of our natural pivot as a company that became kind of our climate was, we're just being helpful. We're just being helpful. How do we make this businessy, but we're being helpful. And that's still kind of what we are to this day. In fact, we did personality tests, the Myers-Briggs personality test, across our team about 2 years ago. Yeah. And almost everybody was something in TJ, except for our developers, who were, of course, a little more introverted, but I think everybody was firstborn, everybody across the board. So, helpful is just kind of, it's in our DNA at this point. We can't not be helpful first.
If you can't tell, I was not firstborn. I'm the goofy off the wall kind of. If that's not blatantly
all obvious, shapes and kinds, all shapes and kinds. It takes them all for sure.
So you're an ENTJ then.
I think I was an ENTJ.
Yeah. So I'm an ENFP. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so I like ideas. I like to think about it. Not so much doing the stuff. I like to think about it.
I am of the mind. I'm not a huge, I don't study a lot of the personality stuff. And I believe that there are a couple of different really key tests out there. But I come to the conclusion that I think that you can actually change over time. Might start out life one way and then you come into another season and then you kind of change. So I'd be interested to see where I'm at now because it's been a couple of years.
You know what? I think there are people that come up with these tests and everything like that would disagree with that. But I agree with that. And because I'm like a personality assessment junkie. You give me an assessment, I'm going to take it. I don't care what I have to do. If you send me an assessment, I'm going to do it right then. Drop everything, right? And it's like, no, this is really client project. No, there's a new assessment I have to take.
But I have to do this assessment.
And I've been that way for 20 some years. And actually, I would buy my girlfriend these assessments. It would drive her absolutely up a wall. she finally said, she's like, I'm not taking any more of these damn assessments. But I'm like, aw. So I know what I was in my early 20s, and I know what I am now. It's shockingly 44. So I've definitely, like, I am not as, believe it or not, I was actually more extroverted back in the day, if that's possible. But I was, you know, and now I enjoy a lot of people, but I enjoy, you know, small groups even more nowadays. But yeah, and I'm much more of, but yeah, so I think you definitely change and evolve and everything like that. So, and I get charged at over time, you know. So yeah, I think that's a really cool kind of thing there. But let's get back to the recession, because although how much I love my tangents. So the recession hit, and, you know, like, well, the recession was going on, and, you know, you just, you know, had that. I think you have a really great attitude, where from our talk, you don't have, like, you're about what needs to be done and not, like, nothing, like, it's like nothing, it seems like, is set in stone for you. You're nothing defines you except for what you could accomplish in the future. It's just kind of what I gather from you. Would you agree with something like that?
So I think, I don't know that I was always that way. It definitely took walking through struggle and kind of gritting through mire at some point in my own kind of personal development and getting to where I was in my career. Whenever the shift happened, you kind of, it's something that you just walk away with, and you don't realize it kind of builds up over time. You get this sort of thick skin to the problem, right? The more you deal with, the less impacts you in a greater way. So I think that was just a lot of what it was just, I kind of built a lot of that up over time. And I was like, you know what, what are my problems now in comparison to what I thought they were, and kind of just moving forward.
See, I love that attitude. I love the attitude, like, you know, I'm just gonna just roll with everything. And I think the people that are rolling with the events right now and dealing with them and not letting them, you know, get in their way, and even though it's hard and they're trying to deal with it as much as possible, but they're still keeping their eyes on all the great things that could happen in the future. I think it's, you know, I think that's the mentality that makes a successful business. So
I agree. One little anecdote.
No, I love anecdotes, please.
Because
this, five anecdotes, struck, please.
Yay. Well, it struck me, I kind of got into, I think it was a chef's table, the Netflix series, where they tell the story of this famous chef from kind of their roots, their beginnings, and how they got to be where they are. And a lot of the stories were very volatile, and running away from home, recovering from cancers, you know, lifestyle changes that were very polarizing in their lives and their families. And it made me think a lot about when I was little, my mom used to read those Chicken Soup for the Soul books. Did you remember those? Uh-huh. They were big back in the day. Uh-huh. And I was like, man, it kind of reminds me of those things where they always start out with the story and you're like, whoa, this is awful. And then by the end, you're like, shit, yeah. And you realize that none of it would have happened. That peak, that high would never have happened without the trough. And there almost seems to be a correlation between how deep you allow yourself to go with how high you end up on the other side of it, right? So
I love that.
I agree 100%. Like, just you've got to go through the suck to get out on the other side.
Yeah, and I think it's like, if everything was great in life, how would we have anything to gauge it with to appreciate how great
everything
is? No measurement,
right? You've got to have a measuring stick. You've got to have a measuring stick. 100%.
Because it's all so relative, you know, because we, you know, there's very few absolutes in life. It's all kind of like,
right.
And as an engineer, I'm sure you know a lot more about variables and constants than I do.
Well, let me tell you, speaking of being different, I did graduate industrial technology, and, you know, I kept engineering, survey, numbers, background, where there's a lot of logic, linear thought. But last year, I finished my 200-hour yoga teacher training.
Oh, cool.
So there's so many different aspects to it. So I don't necessarily follow the same credo or thought patterns that I did back then, right? So you just kind of learn to expand into new things. And it's just gathering information. You know, you don't change, you just add more onto the pile.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's so constantly evolving kind of way is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Because everything belongs, right? There's a reason. And so, you know, going through it, there's a purpose. And if you embrace it, again, that's embracing the suck, right? So even if it's a crummy thing, you embrace that suck, there's a purpose for it. And there's always, you just got to get through. I tell my kids all the time, the only way out is through. The only way out is through. The start of this pandemic, my husband works in a nursing home. And so it's it's still a lot of turmoil. And he would come home every day just worn and exhausted and emotionally drained. And I'm like, the only way out is through. The only way out is through. The only way out is through. And finally seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, you know, and there have been some peaks that have come out of this, you know, but just going through that, you can't do anything but get through it.
Yeah. So I love that saying. I'm going to start using embrace the suck. That's because I think
it's not mine. I don't know where I got it from. Might be a Brené Brown thing or something. I don't know, but embrace the suck is good.
I love Brené Brown. I just like her Netflix special. It's crazy. So
have you heard her podcast?
I haven't. She has a podcast.
She's got a new podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out too. I'll tell you a story about Brené Brown. So I was coming home from giving a talk somewhere, and then I was on the plane, and you know, I'd always wanted to listen to Brené Brown and everything like that. And so, no, I wasn't. So it was the second time I listened to it. The first time I listened to it, I was, and I hadn't really done a lot with this, you know, whole brand here that I'm doing, helping agencies and with their understand their money. But I listened to that. And I'm like, you know what? I just gotta, you know, be more vulnerable about this, you know, because my dad had just died and it was just a really rough time and I had to go out there and just, and so it really challenged me to just put myself out there and be vulnerable with it, everything like that. And then, so I go home all excited to do this. And like, I think a lot of us do sometimes, I said, yeah, I'll get to that later. I have too much other stuff that's going on that's wrong, you know? So,
yeah.
And then I listened to part of it again when I was coming home on a plane, and I got through the first maybe like 15, 20 minutes. And then one night, so this is a very, very long story that's very drawn out. So but this is really what should be left on the editing floor is everything I just said. But anyway, so the point of the story is I was at my best friend's house, and he's like a kind of manly dude, kind of like, he's like 6'2", you know, he's like arms as big as my like thighs and shit like that.
Right.
And we're sitting there, it's like midnight on a Friday night, and we're watching the Brené Brown special because he was telling me the story. I'm like, dude, you have to watch this. His wife walks in, looks at us and says, what the hell is going on here? And then walks right back out. So she's like, who are you people? But anyways, that's why I love Brené Brown, because I think it was in heat. Yeah, so it's like, so yeah. So long story short, yeah, she's great.
It's a wonderful memory.
So, yeah. And she was like, I don't even want to know.
That's so, but, you finish.
Yeah, so that's cool. That's cool. So like, so you were like, just embrace the suck. And then you did that 10 years ago. You're doing that now. So how is your company getting through the, like this COVID kind of lockdown, recession kind of period here?
Right. Well, so we immediately felt some clients pull back. We had some projects that got stopped. We had some people that just kind of stopped their retainer plans with us. And then we had some that were in businesses that they needed extra work because they wanted to make sure that they were doing what they could with their businesses to get through the pandemic as well. So it was very interesting. It was a lot of a seesaw, teeter-totter. Good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. I think we're still kind of on that roller coaster. But my policy has always been to be as transparent as possible. So nice. We don't necessarily circulate the P&L, but we are very obvious about where things are. And if there are tough times, then we have tough times. And it just so happened probably about a year ago, we had this like weird storm of events, and we had to have like some really hard conversations with the team. Like, look, this is what's happening. Money's not great. We've got to, you know, cut back here. We've got to do that. And everybody really rallied, which I think was kind of fortuitous for us walking into this situation. Right. So we actually drew back. We went down to weekly payroll. We kind of dropped all of our metrics and numbers and requirements for, you know, the next few months, because none of that really matters, right? It completely shifted our marketing focus, our client focus, everything.
Yeah.
So we really just went back to our bones. What's important? We got to make it to payroll week to week, and we got to make sure everybody stays happy. You know, so we balanced out our internal time, made sure that we focused it in on meetings when we were together and less on internal projects. So we made quite a few different changes, but all really focusing on the team, the humans, you know, being honest. And sometimes honesty is not always beautiful. Right. And sometimes we have to say, honestly, you may not have a job, but we'll let you know a week in advance, you know, trying to do as much as we could to insulate everybody. We are completely 100% remote, and we do have people overseas. So they were being affected in a different timeline than we are, even though the majority of their work comes from U.S. clients. So very, very interesting to watch it all. And it's still happening.
You know, What struck me about that story is you have all this going on, like on the financial side of the business, and all this going on with business like that. And you were concerned about, and what was important to you was the happiness of your employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of people, if you'd have said, we're not sure you're going to have a job next week, and the remote employees, they might have been demotivated and started looking for a job elsewhere because, you know, there was uncertainty, there was, you know, fear and everything like that. Let's talk about your company culture, because there has to be something to say something like that. Like, I cared about how happy my employees were, you know, at a time when everything was, you know, kind of going sideways. So, talk about that. Tell us about.
Well, the precursor to you may not have a job in a week was please do whatever you need to do for yourself and your family. That was the first part of the conversation, because we're not sure where things might be. We're going to do the best we can to get a runway and to make sure you have some notice. But us all being in the same position really helped with that conversation, because everybody was feeling it. Everybody was in the same boat to some degree. But that was, you know, I can't expect of my employees to give to my company something I'm not willing to give them as well. I feel our business conversations have little interjections of personality and personal things that are happening, because we really do believe that you are who you are at work and away from work. So you can't ignore that. And if somebody was going to go look for another job after I told them that you may not have one in a couple of weeks, it is that unstable, they should do what's best for them. I can't expect them to stick around for me. Why? You know, I can't offer you any protection. And if you have a kid, or you, why, we have one guy just bought a house, you know, his first house a few months ago. We have another employee, a team lead with three kids. You know, what am I going to tell you to do? Stick around and wait on me to tell you we don't have any money? No, that's unfair. So this is a bad culture in a bad climate, and nobody thrives in that, you know. So, but by coming together and all saying, look, we'll do what we have to do for now, we found that we've been able to get through rough patches in the past, and it creates a sense of resiliency, and people want to rally. They want to have a cause, especially when things aren't good. If you see a light, then you kind of maybe attracted to that. You need some of that positivity, especially in a time like now where there is no precedent for the sense of grief. And we're coming to this end of this adrenaline rush that we don't know what to do with, because things still haven't changed. And, you know, so it was a strange thing to say at the time, but if somebody would have left, I wouldn't have blamed them at all.
You know, I'll go back to, you know, you see so many companies, like they start with these values and everything like that. Then things keep on going, and like, and they get away from their values because they get more success. They get a taste of this, they get a taste of that. But what you said before was that you started the company, you're just like, how could we help people? And then like 10 years later, you know, when things really get tough, I think you went back to that initial kind of, well, I don't think you ever got away with it, or ever got away from it. And that's why, you know, you had such a great culture. But it seems to me that you just said, okay, well, how could I help my employees now? So it was just,
yeah, it's a sense of service mentality. And I believe I try to live that way. Right. And I think a lot of people on our team actually do try to live that way. That's a lot of their personalities and a lot of the way that they kind of function even outside of their jobs, which kind of makes it come natural. But we kind of did the reverse thing that a lot of companies do, especially when people are trying to be very professional, right? You get this idea that companies are built on these manuals, right? Like, if I could just get the right checklist, then I've got all the pieces in place. And that is not the case. But culture is something that is intangible, and you can't make a checklist for it. It's a collection of all of these things that are very taboo in business, right? Emotions, personalities, like all these things that everybody's just too scared to touch. And we kind of started from, instead of going, well, here's a framework, this is our company policy, and this is how our interactions are going to go, we kind of went backwards. We started with the people, and we're like, oh, well, this kind of comes naturally. This doesn't. Let's make that a policy, that we just don't do that thing. Or we kind of started with the framework of what works and kind of keeping everything open instead of restricting it to our culture or these things. We actually did an evaluation and said, okay, our culture seems to be these things. And we have a few values that I think have kind of stayed true over the last few years, because we actually talked about rewriting them at one point. But tenacity, leadership, humility, excellence, there's one more that's escaping me right now, but those are just things that we've kind of tended to gravitate towards and we keep as our central values.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's amazing. I think what you said there about, instead of saying, okay, let me look at another successful company and say, let me copy their values. You're like, let me look at my company and what's making us, you know, unique and different. And let's double down on that. Because what maybe worked for, you know, like say like Netflix that has a really rough corporate culture isn't going to make Valet, another tech company, successful.
Right. But I will say it did come from some sense of imposter syndrome, right? Because I was in that same frame of mind thinking, I've got to be like a successful business. And who is a successful business like me? And how do I model that? And then at the same time going, oh, maybe I don't want them to know. And then you kind of focus back internally. And so it came from a sense of being unsure and not, you know, not knowing what to copy or who or wanting to put out there that we were doing a thing. I'm just kind of, you know, we're just going to stay over here in our little corner. And then eventually it turns into something even better, which is a real, true, genuine work culture.
And I think that's true leadership right there. I don't think that's leadership. Yeah, I think that's a true sense of leadership, you know, and I think that's what probably, yeah. I love that story. I think that's so cool that you get that you build a culture up from, you know, a grassroots kind of culture that fits your organization. And the other great thing I think you said there was just, you know, there's not a checklist for running a great company.
No, there's not. There's not a checklist for doing anything other than maybe sewing a button at some point. And even that is is relative. It's hard.
So where, how did you get, like, let's talk more about this kind of like service mentality. Like you're the CEO and you have a staff and you know, all these kind of things and, you know, like, but you don't seem to be putting yourself on a pedestal or putting your opinion and your take on things to be anything. It's that's not like top down.
I'm useless without them. What do I do without them? What do I do without my team? I'm just a talking head sitting here, you know, at my computer and saying things that I think out loud. And it's useless. You always hire up. You always hire people smarter than you. You should always be and surround yourself with people who can do things that you can't. It's inspiring and it's humbling at the same time. I was raised, you know, my father was an entrepreneur, but he was a hardworking Navy man. And whenever he finally found some success in the tech world, he ran a telecommunications business. And he would always still tell me, he was like, you are not irreplaceable. Any job you do in your life, someone will replace you. They can take you and the world will move on. And so very early, I had this sense of impermanence, you know, that I always had to be very aware of what I was doing and always make sure I was doing it well and contributing. You know, I had no guaranteed place in life. And so that kind of started it for me. And both my parents, though, were very humble, wonderful people. And they raised us to kind of feel the same way, that you're not special other than you were made to be special. But, you know, nobody's going to hold a hand out for you. And so you also need your fellow human to get you through. And so moving into my professional career, I figured out the grandeur of large teams, right? Of people having specialties and one guy really understanding this portion of a project and one guy understanding this portion of a project, everybody coming together to like solve this huge problem and create this wonderful thing. It was very illuminating for me and something that I took with me into what I'm doing now, for sure.
So it doesn't seem like there's a lot of ego at your company. And it seems to be like that is something that is definitely left at the door. Have you ever hired like somebody that thought they were a special snowflake?
yes, we have. We've had many different personalities. I mentioned earlier, we've been through many expansions and retractions in team sizes and different things. And so over the years, yes, you do come across people who think differently than you. And while it's usually not a roadblocker, every now and then it's, you're just people who think that they're kind of above the workflow, you know, and I don't want to tell any stories because I'm not going to give anything away to anybody that might ever hear this, because I love everybody that I've ever worked with. it wasn't always a good fit, you know, even some of the, even some of the rough times were just really, really just indicators for us, right? They kind of helped us to narrow the margin even more on the right kind of fit for the team and for the culture. So we have had various personalities on the team, some of whom decided that they were going to do their thing come hell or high water.
So how did you handle it?
Oh, well, I have to say, one of the first times I was lucky not to be the one to handle it. It was someone that was working very closely with my co-founder and he had to deal with it. I just sat there and went, oh man, you know, I dealt with it the first time very empathetically. I was beautiful, wonderful at being empathetic. But the second time, it really just seemed to be a matter of honesty. You know, it kind of came back to transparency and like, look, what's really going on here? Let's get back down to basics and bare bones. And it just turned out that, you know, whenever we had all decided to start working together, it just wasn't, it wasn't what we thought it was going to be. And it didn't turn out the way that we thought it was going to turn out. And that was okay. There's a bit of a fear in admitting that you were wrong, especially whenever you have a business, right? When there are multiple people getting paychecks and like, there's a lot of fear behind saying, oh, I didn't do that right. Or, oh, if we have to go back now. And it's hard, but when you kind of, again, you embrace the suck and you push through that hard conversation on the other side, I mean, everybody's still friends, you know, everybody's still talks. There was no, you know, lost, respect for anybody, you know, which is, to me, that's the best outcome, right? So I think a lot of times it's not so much that any one person wants to override another or be the head of the pack or be the best. I think it's just that people have conflicting expectations and conflicting goals, and being able to kind of unpack all the other shit on top of it and get down to what that is makes it a lot easier.
So it's about, you know, you were aligning, you know, the goals of your company and the values of your company with a person that you like, the person that, you know, that, but just wasn't, you know, just didn't share those. They had their own kind of vision and it just...
their own vision, their own approach. You know, I mean, there's a lot to say. I did a reading and we kind of did a pivot for a while towards Holacracy in our company. It's an organizational structure. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it, it kind of tries to create this lateral hierarchy within a company.
Okay.
But their big philosophy is you look at the role instead of the soul. And I agree that at some point, divorcing the human from the job that you expected them to do is very important. But I think you should never neglect the human at all. But if you go in and focus on that role, right, that's exactly what that is. What is the role that you were hired to do? What are the exact expectations? What are the exact deliverables? And maybe sometimes just the soul is not in that same mind space, right? You didn't just see, you had different expectations whenever it came on, or you had the same and it just didn't work out financially, or the workflow was bad, you know, or the business model was a bad fit. You know, there's so many different reasons that don't have to do with people that you can kind of go back to. And those are the real things to focus on instead of, oh, you know, Sarah was a terrible whatever. You know, you can't do that because maybe she's not. You know, maybe you didn't give her what she needed, or maybe you guys were doing two different things.
Yeah, I need to re-listen to this part again and again and again. I'm a big chicken when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I hire friends so many times, and it would just be like, you can't get rid of a friend. And I'd be like,
my father told me, he was like, you never hire friends and family. Never hire friends and family. I've only broken that rule one time, and it worked fine.
I broke that rule so many times, and I've always come, except for my sister. But then I get friends with, even when I don't hire a friend, I get friends with the person. I'm like, oh, I like them. Like,
well, it's different. So, what comes in the order, right?
Yes, I'm just screwed, and I'm like, I'll just pay them because I don't want to have to deal with it. You know,
so we've been in that situation too. Yes.
And but it's such a cowardly thing because you hurt your company, you hurt your vision, you hurt the people working around you and everything like that. Because so,
I wouldn't say it's cowardly though. I would say that part of that it's part of that ingrained whatever business is supposed to be, right? Whatever business is supposed to look like. In fact, a lot of people would say, you know, you're just doing what you need to do to maintain things, right? There is such a gap between the reality of working with people and the reality of managing a business. Like, those two things are totally separate. But people think that just because you can balance a P&L and you know how to market something and get somebody in a click funnel, that all of a sudden you're going to be good at human resources. And that is an awful, awful lie. Horrible.
Yes. Yes. My dad worked for Westinghouse. He spent a whole career in Westinghouse. Luckily, he got out right before it all went to hell. But one of the things that, you know, they wanted to constantly promote engineers instead of like the truly talented people, you know, that, but they're like, oh, this person's a super successful division general manager, you know, because they knew like nuclear physics really well. They'll make a good CEO.
No,
you know?
That does not make you good with people. In fact, often that makes you less good with people when you prefer to spend your time with a calculator, not human faces. So, yes.
So I guess that's why I'm so good at people, because I hate spending any time with a calculator.
There you go.
And that's why I think I can teach people about finances and stuff like that, because I absolutely, like, spreadsheets freak me the hell out. I don't want to look at a spreadsheet. It's like, you know, it's like I have to, for this course, I'm making these templates we're doing, and this is what I have to do after this, after we record this. And I've been putting it off all afternoon because I'm like, I just don't want to spend my time. And so what I do is I make it as simple and easy to use as possible, because I'm like, okay, what is the, how could I not freak out looking at this? And then I know, let me just dumb it down even more, because then I'll feel confident. When I open it up and I just don't want to just go get a direct glass of water or do something else,
red
do a little
flag,
laundry
yes.
or something to get away from it, that's when I know it's been a good template.
Right. So, oh my gosh. That's good. That's really good.
So, why don't you tell us just a little bit more about Valet and everything like that and how you help people, because it's really cool what you do. I think it's a really neat kind of niche kind of thing that you do. So
I think it's interesting. We fill a strange gap. When we first started doing this, there wasn't much, preconceived notions. There wasn't much of a preconceived notion about what maintenance and support was. And from the time that we've started, we actually went through this phase where we stopped using the word maintenance because people were commoditizing the word and turning it into a $39 product, which is not a real thing. so we did a lot of thinking around why that was a problem and how do we articulate that to people. So we established, based on our years of experience, a website healthcare pyramid, where we could start talking to people about why you have these different layers of a website that has to work holistically together. So using a word that's as big as maintenance, but paying a price as small, $39 a month, actually wasn't doing you any favors, right? Somebody was kind of cheating you with marketing language. And so we've kind of gotten back into using the word again, but framing it around our own product that is productized, you know, and then kind of talking more about what is the professional support and filling in the gaps for people who don't want to learn websites, content management systems, right? They want to sell their products. They want to write for their agencies. They want to get donations for their nonprofit. They don't want to have to worry about all the other tech junk. And so that's where we kind of step in and do all that lifting and moving and thinking and planning and creating for them.
So you do like consulting and everything like that if somebody...
Yeah,
like,
if you write in, yes, it's built into our business system, our business processes. Our model is based on, we are consulting 100% of the time. Because if you say, I want a green thing over here, we're going to tell you, no. let's talk about the goal. What is the green thing supposed to do? Because if you put the green thing over here, it's going to mess up this yellow thing over here. And maybe we should make it purple. You know, so we're constantly always putting our career knowledge, our software knowledge, because we're very active in the software ecosystem that we work on, right? So we can take all of that, you know, bleeding edge knowledge and new stuff and translate it into ways that we can help other people in the best way possible. We believe in sustainable code. We believe, like I said, in a healthy, holistic website that works for you in all different levels. And we don't own any of that. We do it all for you. We do it all in your system, you know, because it's truly a service, right? We don't try to take anything. We don't demand that you host with us, you know, any of that kind of stuff. We just help you as much as we can.
So then let's play like fill in the blank. Then if I have this problem, I have blank, and why should I call Valet? How would that work? Is that clear?
Or did I just? I feel like I need to go through like my sales inbox and see what the last like five kind of things are. We resonate very well with marketing directors, directors and companies, marketing managers, people who have this job to sell the company to other people and to work on these systems and promotional things that get the word out about their company to other people. But all the functional tidbits underneath it, though, I'm a marketing director and I need to figure out how to make sure that my collection form on the website's broken. Or I need to make a new page with COVID resources on my website that, you know, links out to these different places, or I need to be able to collect certain things, or I have a I have a very specific intranet usage that I need to plug an external portal into, or LMS is a big thing right now. We get a lot of requests from people who are moving learning management systems or creating them and say, I'm moving from one platform to another, or I need to migrate a database. We're really good at listing and moving things like that, like just information and data that people have no idea where to start. If you are a professional hairdresser and you want to do online courses to teach people how to cut their own hair, right? Quarantine, let's build up a foundation of let's cut your bangs, ladies, because that's the biggest thing I've been seeing on the internet. Everyone's cut their bangs during quarantine. If you wanted to put that together and then you realized you had to move it from one system to another because you didn't like the one you had or you didn't know where you start, how would you know where the stuff lives in a database? How would you know where to find it? How would you know how to move it? You know, if there's no one click button that says take this here and put it here, we're a drag and drop society, right? I mean, everything is just laid out for us so beautifully. And when you get outside of that, it's a waste of time for professionals. First of all, they shouldn't have to deal with that sort of stuff, right? But then how do you justify paying an entire year's worth of salary, 40 hours a week to someone that you might only need 10 hours a month, you know? So, I mean, it's a very interesting space that you can come in to help people financially. You can come in to help people technically, and you can actually be the expertise for them so that they can just trust you and go on with their business.
And spend time on what they do the best and avoid,
Back to work.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. Fantastic. So if they want to learn more about Valet or connect with Kimberly, how would they go about doing it?
Valet.io. That's our website. There is a contact form there. You can write into hello@valet.io at any time, and we'd be more than happy to talk to you.
All right. Fantastic. Well, Kimberly, I thought it was a great conversation. I thought it was really inspiring, and I appreciate your time.
Same, Nev. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Sure.
That was the Profit and Impact Podcast with Nev Harris. For a full recap of this show, or for more info on making more profit and impact with your agency or freelance business, visit nevharris.com. If you liked this episode, show us some love. Give us a rating and comment over on iTunes and help Nev get the message out to more agency owners and freelancers. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.